This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome to the Sky Blues Extra podcast, which is kindly sponsored by Shortland Horn, Coventry's leading estate agents. My name is Tom Ward and I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Ross.
Good evening. How you doing, mate? I'm good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Obviously, yesterday's result wasn't the best, but a good weekend overall, I'd say.
Well, exactly. I mean, yeah, just stuffed myself with Easter eggs. So it was a good end to the day, you know, just sort of drown my sorrows in chocolate. But it was a good weekend overall. I think it's been a good couple of weeks. The weather was the weather was sunny and shining. So yeah, we can't be too disappointed.
Yes, exactly. It was a busy weekend for football. The Sky Blues took on Birmingham on Good Friday and came away with 4-2 winners in a very exciting game and a brilliant second half performance as well. But unfortunately, as we mentioned, Easter Monday wasn't as favourable and the Sky Blues fell to a 3-0 loss to Bournemouth in front of a packed out CBS, though, which obviously was one of the positive things about yesterday. As usual, we'll talk through all of the key moments and we'll also look a little bit towards the summer and perhaps where Mark Robins will be looking to strengthen. So, Ross, let's go through the Birmingham game. I will run through the match stats. So we had 52.8% possession. We had 13 shots versus their 12, 7 shots on target versus their 2, and 290 passes completed versus 269, 3 interceptions versus 13, 17 tackles won versus 9, and our favourite stat of all, 22 aerial duels won versus 20. So I'd say it probably just about reflects the game, really. We'll talk a bit about the team lineups as well. I'd say probably not a massive surprise, Ross, that we went unchanged from the team that beat Fulham.
No, not really. I mean, you know, when you go away and beat the sort of champions elect of the 21-22 season, you know, what changes could we make, really, you know, unless they were sort of enforced. So, no, it was great to see the same team. Obviously, we were playing away as well. And obviously, as we've become accustomed to, we do quite like that sort of one up top, don't we, away from home. Not that we've got too many options because of obviously Godden's injury and Waghorn not seemingly being in that much favour. So it looked like we were going to go unchanged. And I think that was the right way to go, you know, stick with a winning team.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was great to see Jody Jones, Fads and also Liam Kelly back in the match day squad.
Yes, it was. I mean, to be fair, that was the one thing that was sort of alarming against Fulham was I looked at the bench and thought, wow, sort of thing, you know. But no, that was good. That I felt better seeing, you know, some familiar faces, particularly fads. I think we've missed him in previous games. And Kelly, it's been a while. I mean, I haven't seen him since that Millwall game, that atrocity on that midweek game. So obviously he's had his injury problems and reoccurrence of injuries. So it's great to see him back, and hopefully he can get some minutes. And the same for Jody Jones. I really want to see him get given some minutes between now and the end of the season. I know we're going to talk about that later on. But yeah, it was good to see a stronger bench. It fills you a bit more confidence that you've got a few options to try and change a few things if needs be.
Yeah, definitely. And definitely probably a couple of players who we might have sort of written off for the season. I know Fads, I kind of had maybe accepted he might be out for the season, but good to see him in the fold there. In terms of the opening exchanges, I don't know what you made of it, Ross, but I felt like we were a little bit sluggish at the start and just not quite sort of at our best early on, were we?
No, it didn't follow the usual sort of script of our games. We normally start quite well, I think, and inevitably then go 1-0 down. This time we went behind, but we didn't start very well at all. And that was a surprise, really. You'd think that we'd come out the traps, you know, that win against Fulham sort of reignited a bit of hope. It's West Midlands derby. We've got an unbelievable away support again, and Birmingham are there for the taking, really. They're a bit of nothing, you know, they'd be in the bottom three if it wasn't for teams getting points deducted this season. So they're a poor side. And it was really disappointing. I was surprised to see how sluggishly we started. I don't know about you, Wardy.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. They're definitely a poor side. And I sort of expected us to come out the blocks, really, and you know, all guns blazing, especially after a great win, you know, against Fulham. But, you know, it took us a bit of time to get going. I completely agree with what you said, by the way, about them, you know, somehow escaping the bottom three. I was chatting to a guy yesterday about it, how they seem to lose every week, but they seem to be well clear of it for some reason. But like you
said, they've won the jackpot, haven't they? They've won the lottery. They must be counting their lucky stars, Birmingham, this season, because they just remind me, and I said it last week on the pod, they just remind me of what we used to be like under Coleman and Boothroyd and that, where we would just finish 18th, 19th every season. And then inevitably, you just push it too far. And the one season, you don't evade the drop and you go down. And they just strike me as a team, Birmingham, who they don't excite you. Do you know what I mean? They've got the odd player where you go, yeah, they're all right. And they, just like you say, they seem to lose every other week, but they survive. And yeah, I don't think it'll be, I think if they have a poor summer of recruitment, I think they could be in trouble next year.
Yeah, no, definitely agree there. They took the lead. It was a header from Pedersen from a corner. A little bit disappointing, this one, Ross.
Yeah, really poor. We've been doing that recently, haven't we, from set pieces, and it's disappointing. It was a poor goal from our point of view. You'd probably better argue, both sets of fans would be able to argue that all six goals, do you know what I mean, in some way, shape, or form were poor. But it wasn't like an exhibition game to show off great defending, wasn't it? But it was really disappointing. There's something about, I don't know, we're just, and again, I'll touch on it when we talk about the Bournemouth game, but I just feel like defensively, it's becoming a bit of a bad habit. Do you know what I mean? Leaking, we've become a bit leaky again defensively. Not entirely sure why that is. And yeah, obviously they took the lead and it was sort of disappointing. And you sort of just there scratching your head thinking, how have we gone? Only Coventry could go and beat Fulham 7-2 on aggregate, you know, and just beat them 3-1 on their own patch and then go and then suddenly find ourselves losing to Birmingham. But I was sort of thinking, because I said last week, I said this was the game that worried me. And then when I saw it was 1-0, I was thinking, well, yeah, this is why, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a little bit frustrating to be behind that early on. But we did respond quite well, I thought, to the first goal. We created a few chances. There's one for Higham. There was one for Bidwell as well. He fired over the bar. And also Hamer hit the post from a corner. So I guess we did respond well to that early goal, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And that's what you want to see. And usually we've been quite good at that, sort of been able to wrestle back a bit of control. And we had a flurry of efforts. And that gave you hope, didn't it? You know, in terms of the game, you get a feeling like actually there's chances here. These aren't all bad at all. And we can create openings. And Hamer went for he's been threatening to do that all season, hasn't he? Do you know what I mean? Try and score direct from a corner. So hopefully
he hasn't done it.
There's still three games to go, so I'm hoping. So long as he avoids a yellow card. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that was a good effort. So at that point in the game, you're thinking, okay, yeah, it's just a matter of time before there's another goal.
Yeah, but then there was a goal at the wrong end again, Ross.
Yeah.
And quite a similar goal, but obviously this one from a throw. A really long throw, wasn't it? And Gary Gardner gets on the end of it, and it's just almost a carbon copy, really, isn't it, of the first one, but from a throw. And yeah, again, really disappointing.
You're just there watching it, and I watched it back since, and you're just thinking, who's taking control? Do you know what I mean? And that's the one thing I feel like we lack when, you know, and we miss when Fads has been out the side. Where's that real sort of leadership defensively? You know, who's marking him? I mean, I remember when we had Gary Gardner on loan years ago. I mean, he must be ancient now.
No, I suppose he's still going.
But like, really, really cheap goal, you know, really, really cheap. And you were lucky that Birmingham are that bad, because you can't gift teams, you know, free chances like that. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't get those chances, do we, very often? So, really poor goal. And obviously they went 2-0 up. And then at that point, you're thinking, this could be a tough afternoon.
Yeah. And it then became, we absolutely have to score before half time. And if we do, then it will give us a chance. And obviously we got a goal back and Sheaf scored. It was one of those where he's in the right place at the right time, wasn't it? Ball across from Hamer, headed across back from Rose. And, you know, it was on the plate really for Sheaf. But good to see him in that position, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, actually. And it was a good well-worked goal. It was a good first ball over and Rose did well. And he put a good header into a good position. And as you say, it's good to see Sheaf in those positions. And I've been wanting him to score for a while. He hasn't obviously opened his account for us until this moment. So it was a great finish from him. And we've been saying it as well, haven't we? We need more goals from midfield. We can't just be relying on Godin and Jokeres, really. So we've needed more goals from our central midfielders. And although he's predominantly a defensive midfielder, we do need him to be popping up with goals. So it was great for him. It was a good finish as well. And as you say, one thing we have done this season is, even if we have been behind a couple of goals, if we get that next goal, you then suddenly fancy us, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. I remember the whole game when we had that goal, that whether it was over or not. But I think the reason why everyone was so annoyed was that you just knew that if it had been,
we'd
a goal,
got an equaliser. Yeah.
Yeah. We would have gone on and we could have won 3-2. I wouldn't put it past us.
No, I wouldn't have either. Season. No, and I still harboured that hope yesterday. Do you know what I mean? I thought if we just got one, this team doesn't know when to sort of give up, really, you know, and one goal just suddenly ignites us. So yeah, it was a crucial time to get a goal, wasn't it? Like you say, you wanted to get one before half time at St Andrews, and that Sheaf goal was important.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we went one step further and got the second, got the equaliser as well, which was even better. And just like London buses, Ross, Sheaf got his second just a few minutes after his first. But yeah, again, a Hamer corner, kind of similar to their goal, really. And Sheaf's got in there and got his second goal. But great to be in with the equaliser before halftime.
Oh, massively. I mean, it changes the whole dynamic of the game, isn't it?
It's almost a reset, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, you're looking at it and you're thinking, we're going to go in 2-0 down. Then you get one goal. You think, okay, that gives us something to sort of, okay, just build on, maybe tweak a few things and then attacking our fans, you know, go for it. But then to suddenly find ourselves, you know, level pegging again, like you say, it's a reset. And it's great to see Sheaf, you know, rise highest back post and plant a good header down. And another good set piece from Hamer. So yeah, huge sort of 5 minutes that was, get a couple of goals there.
Yeah. Yeah, massive. And what that meant was that we could come out second half, kind of all guns blazing, all the momentum was with us. And that was what happened, really, wasn't it? We just really started to, I thought we really took control of the game and started playing our football. And it just looked like a completely different game, didn't it, second half?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, as soon as we got the equaliser, I felt like, yeah, there's only going to be one winner here. Mm. You know, you could just see the life, you know, come out of, you know, drift out of the Birmingham fans and players, and it did just feel like a matter of time. And it was just the question was, you know, would we take the chances that we'd get? We knew we were going to create chances, you know, could we take them and try and get the win, which obviously, as we all know, we did.
Yeah, it was a shame to see Dabo go off in the second half. Probably looks like his season might be over. He hasn't had a lot of luck, has he, with injuries the last couple of seasons? I don't know if it's starting to become a bit of a concern for you, Ross, with his injuries?
I think the concern for me was obviously last season, like you say, him and Rose particularly, they seemed to just be, they couldn't play more than two games in a row without, do you know what I mean, having a reoccurrence of, I think it was a thigh or a hip injury or something. And then obviously this season he started and was actually, you know, seemingly to be fit. I didn't think he was playing very well. So that was more of a concern for me at the time. But what's frustrating now is I've just felt like he was finding his form again. He was just getting back closer to his best. He got put in that great cross for the equaliser against Blackburn. He then defended superbly against Jed Spence, against Forest, and again against Fulham. And you're thinking, here he is, he's sort of back. And if he can he just finish the season well and then take that into the summer? And it's just really frustrating to see his season seemingly over now. Yeah. And that's another one, Godden out for the season. You know, that was a couple of weeks ago. You know, we've certainly had our fair share of injuries, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. And I don't know with Dabo, it just, they always seem to come at a really bad time for him, don't they? I just remember in the past we've had pods where we've said, you know, he's just getting back to form, then he has an injury and a setback, and same with Godden as well.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not just the injuries, it's they come at bad times as well, don't they? And it's just frustrating, isn't it? It must be really frustrating for the players.
Oh, it must be incredibly frustrating for all the players and for Dabo, because like you say, he just gets into that groove, and then like now it's going to be it's a bad reset button. Do you know what I mean? He's then got to go back to square one again, and then he's got to try and find that form. And can he start the season where he's just finished it now? We hope so next season, but you know, or will it be the Dabo from the rest of the season where I think he's struggled at times. You know, and sometimes he's been played out of position, which I don't think has been helped when he was playing like right centre back in certain games. And obviously he's had that competition with Todd Kane that's helped, which I think's, you know, pushed him. But he was just coming back into form again these last few weeks. And I was really, really pleased with how, you know, he was playing. But I mean, he got injured, didn't he, against Derby in the FA Cup, and then he was out for ages. So, I mean, he has, again, thinking about it, he has actually been injured more than I sort of thought this season.
And I suppose it makes it hard for Robins as well. Cause like you say, going into the summer, it's like, do you sign another player in that position, or do you sort of hope that, you know, we've got enough there? Or it's one of those, isn't it?
It's a balancing act, isn't it, with the budget as well. Like, does he go, oh, you know what, I really feel like we need another right wing back, but actually I really want this sort of marquee signing somewhere else. So do we go with Dabo and Kane again? And I mean, Eccles, he's another one. He was playing so well at right wing back, and then, but he seems to be just injury prone as well. So something needs to be sorted there. I'm not sure what it is, but it's disappointing for Dabo. And it, like you say, it must be difficult for Robins, because he feels like he can't get a settled side, because every few weeks there's another injury to contend with. And yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think, squad depth will definitely be something that we hope to see next season, and we'll probably chat a bit more about later on. 71st minute, we got ourselves into the lead finally. Another Hamer corner. This time it was Rose on the end of it. Don't know what they've been doing in training, Ross, but we can't seem to stop scoring from corners at the moment. So something really pleasing to see, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredibly pleasing to see.
I swear we used to sing, we never score from a corner, and now...
We can't sing that anymore, to be fair. We've certainly shifted that sort of stat. I swear we went seasons, and I just felt like, you know, we'd get a corner and you'd sort of like clap or whatever, get excited. And you just thought, there's no chance we're going to score. But no, we've actually, and it's all about the delivery, and clearly they've worked on it, and Rose and Higham are sort of, you know, imposing themselves a bit more. So yeah, it was great. It was a thumping header, wasn't it? Bullet header from Rose, and fair play to him. He's gotten the score sheet in recent games, and I've been critical before, and certainly some of his defending, but actually he's imposed himself, and that's the other thing. We need our centre back, especially if you're playing three of them, to contribute, you know, with goals, and him and Higham have done that this season, and that's been great to see. And it was a great header.
And we sealed it just before added time, actually, not quite into Robin's time, we should probably call it. But I thought Waghorn was going to slot this home. I kind of really wanted him to, but eventually it fell to Cal, and he slotted it home. But I have to mention the defending from Birmingham, Ross. Obviously watched it back as well. I mean, if I was a Birmingham fan, I'd be absolutely livid with that. I can't believe how long it took us to get it in the net, really.
It was static statues, wasn't it? It was just, I mean,
it was very sort of end of season, you know, we're not playing for anything esque defending, wasn't it?
100%. I mean, it was really nice build up play. I thought Waghorn did well in the build up, and he's put through. I mean, my first issue starts with Waghorn being through. I think he's there, and I'm thinking he can score, and he like backs out.
Yeah,
but he just sort of like, I don't know what he was thinking. He just sort of like, I don't know, jumps, like just backs off, and then obviously then it's, you know, Vic has a shot cleared off the line, and there's only I felt sorry for him, well not really, but there was one Birmingham defender, all the others are just stood there watching, you know. O'Hare has to run past a Birmingham player to get into that position to score, and the Birmingham player doesn't even bother getting back. I mean, I was buzzing for O'Hare. It's another goal, iconic celebration. But I mean, the Birmingham defending, goodness me. I mean, if that was us, I'd be absolutely livid.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what is being said right now on an equivalent Birmingham podcast about that defending. Probably some, probably have to like bleep out a few swear words, I'd imagine.
It'd be interesting to hear because I mean that was on Friday, and you know, on Monday they lost 6-1, so goodness me. Yeah. I mean, no wonder defending like that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And as you mentioned there, the celebration was brilliant, wasn't it? I actually met the bloke afterwards in the pub whose sunglasses it was, and he didn't care at all about his sunglasses, but what an iconic celebration.
Oh, it was amazing. I saw t-shirts at the CBS. People had his face, Callum O'Hare's face with the glasses on. I mean, yeah, brilliant. All the memes and everything. It's, he seemed to enjoy that one, didn't he?
It just shows his character though. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's a great lad, isn't he? And little things like that, that's how you make yourself a bit of a club. You know, there was obviously the wig and the sound system thing when we won the league and like things like this. Like, I don't know, there's being a good player on the pitch, but there's little things you can do that sort of, just that extra bit of character, and I think it
endears you to the fans, doesn't it? It sort of connects you, and you feel connected with the players, and that's the other thing to say. You know, I've said it. I mean, season on season with Mark Robbins since he came back, the connection between how I feel with the players is like nothing I've ever felt before. You know, I felt like I was watching a bunch of 11 players on the pitch. You know, 10 years ago, sort of strolling around, and I didn't feel like they cared. I look at this team and I could go through and I struggle to find anyone who I sort of go, I'm not sure they actually really care. I mean, you look at O'Hare. I mean, he cares. I mean, when he signed that new contract, he said, you know, these quotes of consider me a Coventry fan sort of thing, you know, all of that sort of stuff just gives you so much from the support. That's what we love, isn't it? And, you know, then you get that extra sort of buzz on a Saturday.
Yeah, 100%. And who was your pick for man of the match, Ross?
I think Ben Sheaf. I think not just for the brace, but I just think his overall game. Really, really good performance from him. I'd go Ben Sheaf.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
We'll now move on and review the Bournemouth game from Easter Monday. Sky Blues fell to a 3-0 defeat in front of a 25K crowd at the CBS. Ross, it was a very exciting build-up to this game, wasn't it? Obviously, we were hearing all over Twitter about ticket sales and people posting pictures of the seating map, and there was people queuing outside all around the stadium. So it felt like a massive game. Just so much excitement before kickoff, wasn't there?
Oh, it was brilliant. And it's exactly what we want to see. And I think there'll be a lot more of that next season. I really do. And it was brilliant. It was great to see, you know, the club Twitter in the morning, block 21 sold out, block 22 sold out. Yeah. I have to say though, I have no idea where these 7,500 empty seats are supposed to have been, because I, you know, what's the ground? 32,500. So Bournemouth brought 2,500 in the rest of their stand. You could probably account for 3,000, three and a bit empty seats, but the entire stand where you sit was sold out. Yeah. And then I've seen pictures of where I sit behind the goal, and that looked packed. Well. So yeah, I have no idea. I genuinely have no idea where the numbers come from. Because I went Derby, you know, a few weeks ago, and there was empty seats galore. And then somehow they put the attendance up and there's 26,000 there. I'm thinking, hang on a second. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't add up to me, honestly. But it was unbelievable. It was great. I mean, I thought the atmosphere, and I've seen stuff on Twitter, I thought the atmosphere was fantastic. I mean, around me was absolutely packed. I thought before the game, as the team came out, before, you know, even at 1-0, I thought it was a cracking atmosphere. And I see people say, oh, you know, give me 17,000 over, you know, regulars over the 25 or whatever. I just think it's rubbish. I think,
I agree with you, Ross.
I think it's rubbish. The reason why it feels like that is because we lost 3-0, but it wasn't just the result. Yeah. The performance was flat. And the same thing was said when we drew to Derby. There was a big crowd, but we didn't perform. And that is the biggest disappointment for me. I know you're going to talk more about it, but I just thought if we'd equalised...
You can't make a comparison, can you, Ross? You can't.
No, you can't.
Like, we're comparing, you know, when we beat Peterborough 3-0 at home, Fulham 4-1 at home, that, you know, they were the lower crowds, but we had unbelievably good results. Sheffield United at home, you can't, you know, you can't, you have to do it like for like. I mean, when we played Hull at home with a lower crowd, I imagine it wasn't a great atmosphere.
No, it wasn't at
it's
all.
It's result driven, you know. It's
result, but also just performance driven. Like QPR, we lost, but we played so well, and it was a great atmosphere. No one can tell me that yesterday against Bournemouth with that crowd, if we had beat them 4-1 like we did Sheffield United and Fulham, that it wouldn't have been a better atmosphere than when we beat those teams with a lesser crowd. Nobody can tell me. I thought it was it looked immense. It sounded immense. The problem you have is, unfortunately, and it's become a bit of a theme ever since when it was the Rico era, when we get these big crowds, when we had like those family days back in League 2, League 1, where you'd get 25,000, unfortunately, we don't seem to perform.
But then again, it came against a really tough Bournemouth team, didn't it? I mean, it was a game where, you know, obviously the excitement built, and then the expectation built a little bit, and then the nerves kicked in, and then you're like, right, now we actually are playing Bournemouth here, and it's a really hard game against a top side. And, you know, if it was a game against a lower opposition, we're expected to win, then I could kind of, you know, understand it. But at the end of the day, we were playing Bournemouth. No matter how big the expectation or the excitement got, it was always going to be a really, really hard game.
Of course it was. But I think in a way, I was confident. I thought we were going to get the win. And the main reason was because it was Bournemouth. Like, if we were playing Hull or a team where we are expecting to win with that crowd and the people who have turned up to support the team because they've got caught up with, you know, Robbins' sort of call to arms, you know, after the Birmingham game, and they've responded. If we were playing a team where we expected to win and then suddenly we went 1-0 down, it would have been incredibly, incredibly flat because you're thinking, oh, you know, and then the onus is on the players to get it back. But because we're playing Bournemouth, who are a team who I thought, well, they're going to come out sort of thing. You know, they've not been playing well of late. They've still not got that second spot secured. I thought, actually, if we play our game on our day, we've proven we can beat anyone in this league.
Yeah.
And I thought, with the chance that we had just created and opened up for ourselves after the back-to-back wins, I thought we're going to take them today, or at least we're going to go toe to toe for the whole game.
Yeah, it's just how the game goes sometimes, isn't it? Like, you know, I actually thought our best part of the game was when we went 1-0 down, and we had that flurry of chances and corners, and it was like, I remember turning around to the lads and saying, "We're battering them here for a good 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it was, before their second." And if we'd have scored in that moment, the roof would have come off the CBS.
Oh my goodness!
I mean. You know, talk about atmosphere, it would have been probably the loudest Sky Blue song we've heard for years, I reckon. And it could have been very different, but they got a second, and then, you know, and it just became a completely different game, didn't it?
Well, exactly. And when you play a team like this, a team who are going to be in the Premier League next season, it's about moments. And we've said it far too often on this podcast, and said it probably everyone, the Sky Blue Army, have said it probably to each other, etc. This game literally followed an identical script to all the others, where we were all over them. We're all over them. Victor, I mean, if Victor had scored that unbelievable shot he had, which was tipped round,
yeah,
it, like you say, the roof would have come off. Yeah. You know, there's no two ways about it. So it was, you have to, you know, you sort of sometimes can get away with it against these other teams in the league. And we've said it before, we go behind far too often. That needs to improve. And, you know, there's some great fortune about their second goal, and we'll talk a bit more detail about it. But it was just one of those, like you say, the game just sort of, it just went away from us. And when we had those key moments where we could have just grabbed hold of it, we didn't. And ultimately, that's cost us.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to run through the match stats, which tell a very interesting story that, you know, we had 56.4% possession, 11 shots versus their 5, 4 shots on target versus their 3. 459 passes completed versus 359, 3 interceptions versus their 9, 12 tackles won versus their 13, 14 duels won versus their 9. But that shot stat is just kind of tells you the story of the game, doesn't it, Ross?
Oh, 100%. I mean,
five shots, 3 on target, 3-0 win. I mean, that's clinical, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I mean, the key thing of that is that it was their first 3 shots of the entire game went in, you know, and it was their first attack of the game. Like I say, it's the same old script. We're by far the better tied, and you can literally copy and paste what I'm about to say and put it for Forest, put it for Luton, put it for QPR, all these other games, Middlesbrough away. We literally, with a better team, I'm thinking, these don't look on it, you know. And their first venture, you know, Vic has a great chance. I'm thinking, yeah, we're on it today. And we've started really brightly, as you'd hope, obviously hope and expect. And then their first attack, it's just so far too easy. And then they score and out of nothing, their first attack. Yeah. And you sort of just go, here we go again.
It's frustrating, isn't it? I mean, it was a good header, but it was just came out of nowhere.
Watching it back, I'm thinking he stood between Matson and Bidwell. Who's taking responsibility?
Yeah.
It's not like we're talking about Peter Crouch here. It's Jamal Lowe, you know, he's just headed it in really poor, and it's just far too easy. It feels like we have to break a neck to score. Do you know what I mean? Like everything has to go perfectly. They play one ball. I mean, you know, and you sort of thinking, yes, they've got it on the left track. They've got it on the left wing. You think, okay, well, we should be able to deal with a simple cross in the box, but no, lo and behold, it's in the back of our net. Yeah.
I mean, what typified that for me was if you look at the third goal, the Solanke goal at the opposite end to you at my end. And if you compare that with the O'Hare chance,
identical,
he was put through. Yeah. And it's like Solanke was much wider, wasn't he? And I think, or, you know, it wasn't as clear cut, I'd say, as the O'Hare one, but Solanke just buries it in the bottom corner. That's and O'Hare time. Hits it straight at the keeper.
And O'Hare didn't have any defenders sliding in front of him. You know, yeah. Solanke had Higham and that running back. O'Hare, literally, all he's got to do is the keeper to beat. Mm. And that makes it 1-1. And I think we go on and I think we win the game.
Yeah,
I have that much belief in the team. You know, I think if we equalise there, that they're on the ropes. They were on the ropes. And it was a great move, great pass by Hamer. And you, like I say, and it happened. You know, because I look at that far end from me and I thought, if Bournemouth get that chance, they score. And lo and behold, they get in a very similar position second half and it's in the back of our net.
Yeah, exactly. I think that for me kind of typified it really. That Solanke goal. But you know, we can't be too disheartened. You know, they've got top strikers and top players across their team, haven't they? And we're, you know, although we play great football and we were on top for a spell, that's what happened in the end. They were much more clinical than us, Ross, and that's what you get with multi-£1 million strikers.
Well, exactly, and you know, everything we're saying in this, anything that's negative. I'm talking about this isolated game. You know, this is a game, a game of football out of 46. I don't care who we're playing in our division. I'm disappointed and deflated when we lose 3-0 at home. I don't know. That's another topic to go into, why our home form has just sort of veered off.
Yeah.
But I'm going to feel deflated with anyone. Then you just translate it to the bigger season. And we have exceeded my expectations by weeks ago of what my hopes were for the season. So the season has been the best season in my lifetime. You know, I don't remember the Premier League days. This has been a brilliant season, but this game in isolation, just the way it just fell away. The second goal before half time, huge deflection.
Yeah.
Bit of bad fortune. If we go in half time 1-0, it's all to play for. 2-0, I still had hope that we can pull it back. And the third goal just kills us. And then that, what was really deflating was just that last half an hour. Where we almost accepted our fate. You know, regardless of the playoff picture, forget about that. It was just the game itself was deflating. Agreed. And it's disappointing when we get these big crowds, people who are, you know, you could tempt them to sort of maybe buy a season ticket or something. We showed enough in the second half. That was a shame.
I agree. The game in isolation is just very frustrating. I mean, the time of the goals is just so frustrating.
Yeah.
I think Robin's mentioned it in his interview. I think Scott Parker mentioned it as well, actually, you know, that goal just before half time. And like you said, you still think 2-0 down, fine. We've done this before. We did it, you know, was it Bristol City? We were 2-1 down with 10 men.
Yeah.
Won the game. We've done it before. But to concede in the 55th minute, It's a horrible time to concede the third goal in a game, isn't it?
Well, they often say, don't they, 2-0, the next goal is crucial. Yeah. You know, if it's 2-1, the momentum's with us. We find that second wind, we find that energy, we push on. And as I say, everything we're talking about is literally just about this game of football, you know, in 90 minutes. Yeah. Nothing to do with the playoff picture. I mean, that's by the by, really. Do you know what I mean? We just look at the table and go, oh, you know, it's just exciting. Who'd have thought it? 43 games in, and we've still got a chance at the playoffs. I mean, no one would have told us that was the expectation at the start of the season, you know. So it was just a disappointing game. Like you say, you hit the nail on the head. That poor goals to concede, unfortunate, you know, bad fortune as well, but just poor time. Poor times to concede. And you know, if we take our chances, it's a totally different game. I mean, Scott Parker, I think he pretty much said it, for you know, it was backs against the wall for them for first half, you know, and they find themselves 2-0 up. I mean, when do we do that? When do we go away from home, play poorly, and somehow find ourselves winning 2-0? It just doesn't happen, does it?
No exactly. We won't dwell on it too long, but another positive we can take out of it was that Liam Kelly came on in the second half, and I thought he looked pretty lively. Ross actually looked pretty fit and pretty at it.
He did. He looked better than when I last saw him.
What you said was a pretty sort of dead half an hour of the game, should we say?
Yeah. No, it was. It was good for him to get some minutes. And like I said, last time I saw him play was that Mill game, which everyone played horrific that game. But I just remember thinking, wow, do you know what I mean? I thought he had a really poor game. So it was good that he came on and sort of could get that memory, take that memory away from me. But I don't know about you, Wardy. I was sort of so surprised with the subs. You know, we brought on these three old players, you know, if you like.
Yeah, agreed.
And my question to you would be, so we're 2-0 down and he waits until it's 3-0 down to bring on, to make these changes. And he brings on Waghorn, who, you know, he's had his criticisms and critics, you know, Fads, will he stay? Will he go? He's 35, 36, whatever. And Kelly, you know, he's not young either. And we've got these young players on the bench, Jody Jones, who has featured nowhere near as much as I thought he would. And you've got Tavares. I mean, what are your thoughts on the subs? I mean, we're 3-0 down.
I completely agree with you. I mean, Kelly, I can kind of understand because he probably wants to get some minutes into him and sort of make a judgment on what to do with him in the summer by giving him those minutes. Because if he has a couple of really good games, you probably make a case for him staying on, right? Otherwise, are you looking perhaps looking to move Liam Kelly on? With Waghorn coming on, I completely agree. I mean, it just makes me think about it. Has he promised Waghorn he'd play a certain number of games this season, or because he's one of our big signings or he's on high wages, we feel the need to play him? I don't know, but I completely agree. And you said it a few weeks ago, Tavares has to be given should be given these opportunities now. I think everyone around us was saying it. Just get Tavares on. We've got nothing to lose here. Give him 20 minutes to run around and do something good, because, I'm completely on your side of the fence with that.
I mean, when it was like Forest, wasn't it? Forest away, we're 2-0 down, and he brings on Howley, you know, a CDM as a token, token appearance, really. And I'm there thinking, Robbins doesn't seem to do that. He seems reluctant to play Tavares, say. And we're 3-0 down at home to Bournemouth. You know, the game's gone. It's very, very flat. For weeks, Waghorn was an unused sub. He literally wasn't even coming on. You know, I think Birmingham was his first like minutes for weeks. You're just crying out for almost, or like Jody Jones, you know, he's put Kelly on to give him minutes. I agree. That's what you want to see, especially if he is going to be around and you know, see out the last year of his contract next year. Waghorn, he's got another year. We'll talk about it later. I don't know what the future holds for him here, but Jody Jones, why can't he come on, you know, or Tavares? I mean, it was a strange one for me. It just sort of felt like, and obviously he came on for Hamer, Kelly, and I just was sort of there staring going, is this what our midfield is going to be like when Hamer goes, if he goes? So I was sort of just thinking, you know, it sort of just a stark realization. Maybe it's because the game was flat and it was 3-0, but I sort of just was like, wow. You know, we need to obviously do some business in the summer. But the subs are a funny one, and I just hope, you know, minutes are given to these players in the last three games of the season. You know, forget the playoffs. If it happens, it happens. You know, it's been a remarkable season.
Exactly. I mean, the fact we're talking about this shows it's been a good season. The fact that we've got nothing to, it's not fully over, but let's, you know, assume we haven't got anything to play for. The fact we're talking about blooding in young players because we've got that luxury, rather than, you know, we're fighting to be staying up in the league on the last day kind of thing. shows how far we've come, I suppose. It's you know, it's and the overarching thing is that we need the squad depth for next year as well, that we have more options to bring on, because it's been a theme all season, the subs, hasn't it?
It has been, and that's been the missing ingredient. I think that's what stopped us, or will ultimately be the thing. We look back and go, you know what, that's what we need to do this summer to improve. If we had a bit more strength and depth, if Callum O'Hare wasn't the only central attacking midfielder all season, because, you know, Bright was, you know, a waste of a signing. If we had someone else to sort of bring on and play with O'Hare, or come on or play instead of O'Hare and allow that rotation, and that goes for central midfield and wing backs, etc., I think we'd be in the playoffs, because I think on our day we've proven we are better than these teams above us. Like, they look bang average, some of them, a lot of the time, but they've got that consistency, and I think that comes with being able to have a bigger squad. I think we've got a really, really good, fully fit starting 11, I think, which can be anyone on their day. And I think we've probably got a good enough 13 or 14. But I think once you get past those next sort of two or three players, we're then looking a bit threadbare. And I think that's what we need to improve on in the summer. But I mean, just think back to a year ago, Wardy. We were like, I was terrified looking at, like, you know, Rotherham were playing QPR. You know, we were there, like, biting our nails, or we were scared, thinking, praying that QPR do get a result, or Birmingham beat Rotherham, and because we're fighting relegation. This season, we've had none of that. We could definitely be in a position. We're 4 points off the playoffs. We could be in a position, if we get a result against West Brom, I think we could beat Huddersfield at home. We could go into that Stoke game, 3 points off the playoffs with one game to go, and we go, you know what? If we win the game, anything can happen.
Yeah,
that's just.
It's funny. Football's funny, isn't it? Because it's like, you can have a season where you fight for relegation and you feel great that you survive. And it's all like, it's almost a celebration. Like, you know, you've seen it. People run on the pitch because they've survived. And it's like, and then if you miss out on the playoffs, it's like, we've missed out on something. We've not achieved something, when actually we've achieved everything below us and we've survived relegation. But we've just missed out on something that's way beyond our expectation anyway. But it's just a funny one, isn't it? It's like that hope that kind of catches you out, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And then the thing is, you know, when we're all football fans, the expectation does rise. And you know, you think, oh, you know, what if, you know, it's ifs and buts, you know. Yeah, anyone who actually sort of, you know, no one thought we were going to get the playoffs at the start of the season. Mm. As the season goes on, you're thinking, okay, yeah, we can. You know, you wouldn't want to finish bottom half. That would be disappointing in relative terms to how the season went. But, you know, it's been remarkable, and I've said it, you know, before. I mean, for me, the game that sort of the most disappointing game of which sort of made me think our realistic chances of the playoffs was potentially gone was that Hull game. You know, we just beat Sheffield United. That was the game. Losing 3-0 to Bournemouth in isolation as a game, I was really disappointed with the result and the performance second half. But in terms of that, that's not what sort of killed the playoffs. It's the games like Hull at home and Luton when we're battering them for 38 minutes.
Derby away, missing those two chances.
Exactly. But like you say, and we've all said it, and you know, the vast majority of fans agree, we are, you know, if we can finish top 10 this season, top half minimum, we'll go, wow. I would have all took that. I'd have took 15th. Any improvement?
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, when the dust settles, I think everyone will see it as a brilliant season. I think it's just when you caught up in the moment of the games, and like you say, when we start analysing the Bournemouth game, and everyone gets quite caught up in it, and there's a big crowd there and all these different factors. But I think when the dust settles, we'll look back at the whole season. We'll obviously know where we could have done better in games where... But then there's also games where we scraped to get together and won in the last minute. Yeah. So I think when we look at it across the whole season, we'll definitely look across it fondly, I think. And that it's been a great season, like you said, probably the best in some people's lifetimes.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we're on 62 points. We're 1 point off the highest tally we've had since we got relegated, which was 63 when we finished with Mickey Adams, 8th. So if we can get one more win, we'll surpass that. Who would have thought that four seasons ago?
And that's where you're into territory, you know, people say about Sisu have got us back to where, you know, they found us kind of thing. Well, you could start to make an argument that we're actually, you know, definitely heading in the right direction, and we're in a better place than we were, which is great.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we are in a better place. I mean, you know, the journey from when they took us over, there's, you know, we've spoke about it before. There was a lot of, quite rightly, sort of, I was very, you know, angry and frustrated, and, you know, the journey sort of down, which could have been avoided. But actually, you look back at these 5 years, it was almost like a reset button. And yeah, the journey, and you know, it's not been plain sailing, especially off the pitch. But you look where we are now from when they took us over, and you think, yeah, the crowds, the atmosphere, unbelievable. And while Mark Robbins is at the helm, players will come and go. The players have come and gone in the past. Bayliss has gone, and people were in hysterics. Think back to last season. Remember, everyone thought, if we don't sign Matty James and Ostergaard, we're going down. Mm. You know, but we didn't sign them, and have we missed them this season? I don't think so. No. So players might leave this summer, but we've got to trust. You know, if Mark Robbins can't have the trust of the fans after what he's done, then there's no hope for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, we owe it to him just to let him kind of crack on with it, and you know, and prove it once again, yeah. Really, which he has done. I mean, I've said it a few times. We've only improved since that JPT final. We've only improved, haven't we?
Yeah.
There's not a single point. We've not even had a bad run of games since then, really, have we? So we've just got to trust in it, haven't we? Trust in the process.
And you know, we've overachieved. But so if we finished, you know, 10th or 11th this season, and we've got to back the recruitment, and there'll be the usual summer, like, oh, you know, Hamer's gone, whatever happens. Or we didn't sign such and such. You know, that's all part of the fun of the summer window, I guess. Yeah. But if we improve again on this season, we're a playoff team. Look at Luton. Luton are one season ahead of us because they went straight back up. Yeah. They're one season ahead of us. And look where they are. They're comfortable in the playoffs. Now, the difference next season, I think, will be there will be that expectation next season of we want to get top six.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a different pressure than Mark Robbins and the team have had. Because this season, everyone's been honest, some people had us to go down. Some people were saying it was going to be another long, hard season. There was no expectation for even top half, really. So it was, you know, we've enjoyed this ride. Next season, there will be an expectation because of what we've done this season. Yeah. So it's how we deal with that.
I think the Luton point's a really good one as well. Because I think I've seen people on Twitter in the last few days sort of, you know, saying, well, what are the owners expecting? Are we just going to try and chance it for promotion? Or, you know, how can you get back to the Premier League, you know, without pumping money in? And I think the answer to that is that's what the playoffs are for, isn't it? Like, isn't that exactly what the playoffs are? And that's the beauty of the championships. Why it's the best league in the world is that you can be a Luton and you can finish fifth or sixth or whatever. They're probably going to finish higher than that now. And you can do it. Like, you can do it. You only need to have one good season, put a good squad together. How many teams are below us with much bigger budgets below us and Luton?
Well, exactly. And teams who are losing hundreds of millions. Stoke announced their accounts, 100-something million loss. And I actually joked to me and my friend who I go to the games, we joked in pre-season about two teams' recruitment. And we sort of joked and called them like they were making a load of bargain bucket sort of transfers. And those two teams were Huddersfield and Luton. And look at those two teams.
Yeah,
they're both in the playoffs.
It's smarter recruitment, isn't it?
And it's smart recruitment. You know, you look at, say, Waghorn, he's not like a bargain bucket signing. He's on big wages. But you look at these other teams like Luton and Huddersfield, and, you know, they were signing all these players. And I thought, I'm not too fussed by any of them. And look where they are. So I just think, and I see on Twitter all the time, and I see you know, Wardy as well, respond to people. And I sort of think, I don't know what people want. When I hear people say, oh, it's time for CC to, they need to back or they need to leave, sort of thing. I'm thinking, well, look at the last 5 years. Like you say, we've improved every single season. What do they want us to do? Do fans want them to go and gamble to get to the promised land, overspend with money that we haven't got, and then what, end up like Derby or end up doing what we did before? I don't get it. I don't want us to be in any financial jeopardy. I want us to improve year on year. And I think we will, because I think we will have a bigger budget because of this, of the fans. You got to remember, COVID, clubs are still recovering from the pandemic. But the key thing is we've got assets that we will have to sell. That is part of the model. The model is selling Hamer for 10 million and then using that money to buy another three or four Hamers. Do you know what I mean? For a million a piece, and then selling them again. Look at Brentford. They sold Benrahma. They sold Watkins. They'll sell other players. That is the model.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And yeah, on the, you know, there's, like you say about signing like the Waghorns and stuff. If we'd never heard of Hamer when we signed him. Let's be honest. No one had ever heard of Gustavo Hamer, right? And how much did he sign for? $1 million, 1.2, whatever it was. And the challenge now is you've got to go and find someone like him who's worth 3 or 4 million who's the step up, or another three of him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just, I suppose we're not used to it. It's that next phase in our journey, isn't it? Where maybe the nervousness comes around the fact we've never signed someone for 3 or 4 million or 2 million or whatever, but that's what we kind of need to do next. And, you know,
it's doing it right, isn't it? Like, look at Stoke signed that, Sam Surridge for 5 million. He ain't a 5 million pound player. Would our fans want us to sign someone for a fee just so we can say, oh, we signed someone for 5 million and then turn out to be absolutely rubbish? I mean, yeah. look at Gary Medine went for 7 million a couple of years ago. You can get shafted in this league. Look at Jokeres. People were a bit like, oh, we're signing Jokeres for rising up to 1 million, or Ben Shee for 350 grand. Look at those two this season. Both been magnificent, and they're great assets who down the line could be worth millions to us. Same with O'Hare. And there's other players that you could put into that bracket. Yeah. So like you say, it's about going out there and look at someone like a Scott Twine or something. If they don't go up, that, you know, a couple of million, he's the sort of player that we could afford to buy if we sold a Hamer to get him and someone else and someone else. And suddenly our team has got three additional great players added to the squad rather than just having Hamer in the squad, you know.
Yeah, 100%. A lot of sense being talked here, Ross, I think.
I don't know. We'll see if people agree or not.
No, it's all good stuff. Let's just talk a little bit about the West Brom game. Obviously, we travelled there on Saturday. Of course, we fell to a 2-1 defeat in the reverse fixture back in December. Seems like ages ago that game does now. What sort of game are you expecting at the Hawthorns, Ross?
Well, I mean, they're another team who... Let's remember, just got relegated, parachute payments, and they just got hammered 4-0 by Forest. I'm expecting a tough game because we don't have a great record there, do we? We don't have a great record against West Brom overall. So, but I fancy us to get a result there. I do. I think it's going to be a tough game. I think it will be the same old pattern of Coventry City games this season. We will create good chances. It's can we take them? And if we take them and take the lead in a game, and we haven't taken the lead very often this season, but when we did against Fulham, you suddenly feel, it's going to be our day today. So I think it comes down to, can we take our chances when they come?
Yeah, you want to see us fly out of the blocks early and get a goal. And you feel like with the form West Brom are in, and you know they're struggling, aren't they? And they haven't got much threat up front. You just feel like, if we get that early goal, definitely could be our day. And a thing you mentioned earlier as well, the away form has kind of switched with the home form, hasn't it? Completely second half of the season, and you know there's no reason not to go there full of confidence and play with a bit of freedom.
Why do you think that is? Like, it's great that the away form's got better. I mean, the away form was shocking last year. It's great to see that it's in like the top. I think I saw it was like 7th or 8th or something in the league. Why do you think the home form, after being so incredible, has waned?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, clearly a lot of teams have strengthened second half of the season, haven't they? You know, Forests and teams have come on a lot. Tonight, it's hard to put your finger on, isn't it, really?
I guess the only thing I sort of thought about was whether, and we've sort of touched on it, strength and depth. I think we sometimes at home, because of the lack of options we've had, we've not been able to change it against teams who sit in. And because we've given teams these sort of, you know, these gifts, you know, sucker punches, we've been dominating the team. Then we gift them a 1-0 lead and they're like Luton. They go, we'll just sit in then, try and break us down. And we've not had enough people on the bench to change it. Whereas I think away from home, the way we've played and we've had that self-belief and confidence, we've been able to sort of exploit those spaces as other teams have attacked us, maybe.
No, definitely agree with that. Be interested to see what happens next season. Hopefully we can keep the away form up, because it was a bit worrying early season, but at the same time, we need to get a Fortress CBS back as well in full swing. Big game on Saturday. Obviously the playoff picture, it's sort of still on, Ross, isn't it? But you know, we're not totally out of it. On the point about playing some of the younger players, are we at that stage yet? Or I'd imagine Robins will play a full strength team, you would have thought.
Yeah, I think so. We need to go and try and win the games. But as I said earlier on, I'd like, with our substitutes, let's give a couple of these players not token appearances, but I feel like Tavares has like earned it. He showed in glimpses when he's come on what he can do. And we haven't got that many other options. I think it'd be good to see. I mean, it's Jody Jones, you know, if he doesn't play another minute, Jody Jones, I mean, it's hard to see him staying. But, you know, Kelly, let's can he, yeah, will he play more minutes? Probably. And there's other players as well who could be given opportunities. So it'll be interesting. I think obviously we've got a load of injuries. I mean, you forget about some of them, like Clark Salter, you know, injured. Gordon. I mean, the list just goes on and on. So it's, I don't think we should just sort of, you know, field a load of young players for the sake of it. I think we should play our strongest team and let's try and finish the season well, and then we can take that into the summer.
Yeah, 100% agree there. What's your prediction, Ross, for Saturday?
I've got a feeling, I've got a funny feeling about like a 2-2. I feel like we're going to get something, and I feel like that we could win. It just comes down to those fine margins again. Like, can we defend a bit better? Because that's the only stat that slightly concerns me is we've got three games to go, and we've only conceded like 5 or 6 goals less than we did in the whole of last season.
Yeah.
So if we were to concede, well, like I say, 5 or 6 goals in the last three games, our defensive record will be as bad as last season, which is a concern. But I'll go for the 2-2. So yeah, we'll concede some more goals, I think.
Realistic. We're running out of time, Ross, but I think one of the final points was, obviously there's the fans forum, isn't there, on Thursday with Dave Boddy at the Tavern. I know you're going to be going along, which I'm quite jealous of, to be honest. But just wondered what was sort of top of your mind in terms of what you'll be asking him about.
I think, so obviously anyone listening to this, who it's, I think 7 o'clock on Thursday at the Sky Blue Tavern. So looking forward to it, and it'll be interesting to see what people ask, and hopefully I'll be able to ask a couple of questions myself and see what Dave Boddy says. I, on the top of my mind, I sort of thought about this. There's a couple of things. Number one would actually be our biggest asset is Mark Robbins. And he signed that new contract, but they never put a timescale on it. You know, when in back in League One, my question would be, what's the deal with him? Like, you know, he, as long as Mark Robbins is there, I believe. So, you know, are we going to secure him? Is it, you know, we've got to remember, it's almost 2 or 3 seasons since he signed that new deal. So is it time, when's his contract up, or is it a rolling thing? I have no idea. So about Mark Robbins, I guess. The other one would, of course, be about player sales and the transfer business. And I just want to hear Dave Boddy just understand almost like how much our players are actually worth. You know, we hear so much about other teams' players in the Championship of 10 million here or 15 million here. And then, you know, and whether it's true or not, but we see the Coventry Telegraph say, oh, you know, we've got a 5 million price tag on our 3-star players. I'm thinking, hang on a second, 5 million. I mean, that shouldn't buy.
I mean, your local paper should be doubling it and adding a zero, shouldn't they? Do you know
exactly
what I mean?
Exactly. I don't know why they undersell our players. So my question, I just lose some reassurance that I think we all expect one player to go. And that, like I said, that is part of the model. But I'd be fuming. Like if Hamer or O'Hare or someone, if we undersold them again to a Norwich, like we're not in League One anymore where we sell players for 2-3 million. Look how much Norwich sold Madison, or look how much Brentford sold Ollie Watkins, and et cetera, et cetera. Millions and millions of pounds. So if someone wants Hamer, I want Boddy just to say, we are not, I don't want him to, obviously he's not going to say a figure, but I just want to come out feeling confident that we're not going to just, you know, just pass them off for cheap. You know, if they want to play, they've got to pay to play. And my sort of my final thing would almost be, or slightly off that, about the training ground, because obviously Mark Robbins has alluded to, you know, work needs to be done at Wrighton. I think everyone probably, although we don't go there as fans, I think that's the one part of the club that is probably just below par at the moment. You know, with the atmosphere cracking, the fans cracking, you know, the stadium. Yeah, the manager, everything is like the best it's been in decades. The training ground just looks dated and small. And I think, you know, my question, whether you probably wouldn't answer it, but like, I feel like the Warwick uni plans just look and just scream perfect for a training ground rather than a new stadium when we're literally playing unbelievable and, you know, and got this great atmosphere and got this great thing going on at the CBS. And obviously you post a lot about the Wasps attendances and stuff. I just don't know why we still continue down this mythical line of a new stadium.
Yeah.
When a training ground is what we need.
I agree. I'll be really interested to hear what he has to say on that point. And I don't know, I've just had this slight feeling for a while now that there's something in it in terms of a training ground there at Warwick. It's just a feeling I've got. I just feel like like you say, the stadium side of things is relatively sorted for now and for the foreseeable future. Everyone's pretty happy there. Feels like home now, doesn't it? I mean, it feels like more our ground than Wasps' ground when you look around the place.
You walk around and you barely see a Wasps thing, do you? Yeah, it's
exactly.
Great.
So it feels like our stadium, even though it's not technically our stadium. And like you say, the training ground thing is something that they need to address, and they're pursuing this Warwick thing and continuing to pursue it. And Warwick are obviously entertaining it all. So I don't know. I feel like there's got to be something in it somewhere. And we've heard about Wrighton being up for sale and houses and all that kind of stuff. So it would make sense, wouldn't it?
It makes sense because also, you know, I mean, surely Warwick Uni get more benefit for their, like, if they could have access to like a training facility or part of it, which is, you know, rather than a stadium. Do you know what I mean? And to me, my other thing to a day body would be about the CBS is, you know, for the money that it's going to cost to build a stadium, you know, we need a training ground, but why can't, you know, obviously you probably wouldn't answer, but like, could we not get a share of the CBS, you know?
Because the same price.
And try and own 50% of it. Do you know what I mean? And build
it
that way.
Good point, Ross. Because I mean, look what got us back, right? What got us back was the fact that Wasps didn't have any money and they had to get around the table. They just had no choice but to have us as tenants there. And, you know, if everything's to be believed that we read about, they're not in great financial state. There's bonds that have to be paid back, et cetera, et cetera. And who's to say in the near future, they're not back around the table because they've got to raise funds again. And one of those avenues could be a stake in the Rico, in the CBS, sorry.
Exactly. And to me, it screams that you know, the momentum, the novelty seems to have worn off for Wasps. And you look at the attendances and everything. And to me, and I remember Joyce Sapala, when she did that sort of Sky interview, she, you know, Wasps were sort of topped out and we were in League One and our revenue was the same as Wasps. Mm. And it's like, if we could get to the Premier League, you know, we're in the Championship now. If we got to the Premier League, why would we build a new stadium when we should be, and the natural sort of progression of both clubs, we should be the landlords. So to me, why we wouldn't look at, you know, with everything the CBS has got, the hotel, casino, everything, blah, 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 why we wouldn't look to sort of pursue ownership and a stake in that, and why we'd continue to go down this Warwick Uni stadium, which is bound to be inferior. That is just bizarre to me. You know, when we need a training ground, that's what we need. That's the one thing that almost, you just look at our club and you go, cracking stadium, cracking fans, everything, great kit, everything, great squad, honestly, the manager, everything. And you just go, oh, right. And just, you know, you compare us to like clubs like Bristol City, who are like smaller clubs, and they've got this like really fancy training ground. And you just think, it'd just be really nice if we just had a better quality training ground. Then I'd be absolutely buzzing. I think we'd be set.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it attracts players, doesn't it? It definitely attracts players.
Yeah.
I mean, it was something that I think when we had Leo Ostergaard on the pod, he wasn't massively complimentary towards the training ground.
No.
Brighton, which is fair enough. But, you know, it obviously is something that players consider. And then, you know, he's back out on loan and he's gone to Stoke and I don't know. They've probably got a lovely training ground, but it does make a difference to these players, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. And I just think, just for the look of the club, you know, I think they'd walk around the stadium and they'd be like, you're great. They'd hear about, you know, the fans and the support. But, you know, the training ground is where they go every day. And you just, I feel like we've just outgrown Wrighton. Mm. I just feel like we need a bigger facility and a better facility. And so I'd rather... If Caesar and the club are going to put money into something, I'd much rather them do it in the training ground, you know, and the squad, you know, rather than a new stadium when we've literally signed a 10-year deal. Do you know what I mean? At the CBS. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I agree with you. My gut is that surely a training ground makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, definitely interested to hear what Dave Boddy has to say, Ross. And we'll definitely try and we'll get some feedback out on our page, hopefully, on some of the
100%.
Some of the key points. But yeah, that's all we've got time for this evening. Yeah, thanks for joining me, Ross. It's been a really good, good old discussion there. Listeners, do make sure you check out our partners, Short and Horn, across their different social channels. And as always, if you'd like to get involved in the conversation on anything we've discussed, you just need to use the hashtag SkyBluesExtraPodcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra Podcast.
A
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.